We're going to go on now with the question and answer session. I think this first question came in during David's presentation. It's more of a comment, but David, I'll see, get your thoughts on it. With regard to oil price on network strategy, it seems like there could also be a shift to other modes, such as railroad, that may be desirable from a variety of perspectives. How would you comment on that?
You may not want to please.
Do we still have David on the line?
Yes. You got me on a mute. So I agree with the comment. We see a couple of changes. One is a move toward rail, but the other one, especially with companies that are moving goods from Asia to markets in the U.S. In the past, when the market in the USA was in the East Coast, what you saw is a movement ocean all the way to the West Coast and then trucking the goods to the New York area or to the Boston area. Now we see companies considering, and some are changing their strategy and moving goods through the Panama Canal all the way to the East Coast, and by doing that significantly cutting on some of their transportation costs. And by the way, this is consistent with reducing carbon footprint. And so here, for the first time with high oil price, we see that green strategies make business sense.
Okay, thank you. The next question we have for you, David, what are the average annual worker productivity gains for workers in Brazil, Mexico, or China? Does this offset increased compensation rates?
Yeah, so the data that I reported included both increase in costs and the impact of changes in productivity. And the net result was that total production cost has significantly increased in low-cost countries. Whether it justifies a move, it's not yet clear.
Okay, thank you. We now have some questions for Greg. The first question is, does Walmart still move products from Long Beach to Dallas by rail intermodal?
Yes, we do. Matter of fact, that is a significant size rail corridor for us today. And the majority of that, I'd say probably 80 to 90% of that moves intermodally today.
Okay, thank you. We have another question. Has Walmart considered using wind power?
We have actually, I say yes and no. Yes, from a perspective that we have, even at one of our local stores, we have a couple of windmills on the parking lot that are generating power. A few of our eco stores in the Denver market and Dallas, we're testing wind. Obviously, you've got to be in the right spot to really to be able to hit wind, but I know that our real estate and construction department have been trying to find alternative sources for power, whether it's solar or whether it's wind. We're focused on trying. We're not using it full scale yet anywhere, but we're testing it in several locations.
Okay, thank you. And next one, Barbara and Tony sort of addressed this, but I'd like to hear from you. What would Walmart ask the DOTs to do to help reduce transportation costs?
Great question. I do know that our senior leadership within the transportation division, as well as our logistics, and we have an office in D.C., actually, a government affairs office, have met with Secretary Peters on numerous occasions and have shared with her several topics around congestion, length, and weight requirements, and have kind of given our views. And a lot of that we also work directly with the ATA on. So I don't know that I have a specific answer for you, but I do know that we have been in contact and have had several meetings with Secretary Peters.
Okay, thank you. Another question, are you finding resistance for power units to be exempted from size and weight restrictions in some states? Some states appear to include the unit, and this makes the truck out of compliance. Do you have any thoughts on this and any suggestions?
Jeff Byrne, who is our senior director director of maintenance is probably better suited to answer that question for me than I am. But I can tell you from my perspective on the where our private fleet today plays the most in our network is in our outbound deliveries from our distribution centers to our stores. And that is their core business. They participate about half of it on the inbound side of my business today. But on our outbound deliveries to our stores, we are never close to putting 40,000 pounds on a trailer. So we are well below the 80,000 pound limit, the overgross limit. And on the inbound side, we actually have different loading requirements at our suppliers for an over-the-road carrier versus a Walmart fleet, where we actually put a little bit less product so we do not get caught into those situations.
Thank you. Another question, I don't know if you have the answer, but I-80 is often closed due to bad weather and resulting accidents. What is the cost to Walmart for each day a section of I-80 is closed?
I don't know that I can, if we've ever put a pen and pencil to it, but I know that some of our regional operators are very familiar with Donner Pass. And when Donner Pass is closed, it kind of shuts down one of the main arteries for us into California from our grocery food distribution centers. And ultimately, Walmart really suffers, but ultimately our customer suffers because we're not there with in stock to have the product they need when they're there to purchase it. I do know that, you know, the more opportunities that where we can work with the rail lines and find different ways to get to take trucks off the highway, specifically on that corridor, will help us, whether it's intermodally or whatever that solution may be, would benefit all of us, not specifically just Walmart.
Thank you. We do have a few more minutes, so I don't see anything else typed in, but I'll just give a chance to see if anybody has any questions over the phone line. If the operator could give instructions on how to ask a question.
Thank you. For over the phone, if you'd like to ask a question, that'll be *1 on your touchtone phone. Please remember to unmute your line and press *1. Also, please record your first and last name to help introduce your question. Thank you. And again, that's *1 on your touchtone phone.
While we're waiting, we actually do have a question from the Federal Highway Administration from the conference room that I'm in right now. Chip, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, this is Chip Millar with the Office of Freight Management Operations. This question is for primarily for Greg. What kind of impact right now, as I think most people know, there's been some volatile declines in fuel prices. Just the instability with fuel prices has been pretty obviously going up and then going down here has been pretty remarkable. But what kind of impact are the volatile declines in fuel prices right now having on supply chains in terms of modal shift, and how sensitive or quick to react are shippers to fuel price changes, whether it's being going up or going down?
So let me make sure I have your question right. As fuel prices drop or increase, what impacts are we seeing, one, on the supply chain, and then two, how quickly are shippers reacting to those?
I think you've captured it.
They get it in the most part. So number one, the impact on the supply chain. What we've really seen this year with working with our suppliers and shippers are as we have kind of working through our import network, we're more evenly distributed ports. We have seen a lot of our suppliers take some of that same strategy. For example, one manufacturer of toys came to us just recently and primarily ships a lot through the L.A. Long Beach area, Port of L.A. Long Beach, and said, hey, we understand the cost and the price of fuel. We believe that we ought to come open a ship point on the eastern side of the United States. And then we're able to sit down with them and work through the costing, because we know it's going to cost more to go through the Panama Canal. But we also know we can help save our merchants' transportation costs domestically on the inside once that's open. So what we have seen is a shift to more suppliers looking at adding additional ship points and then rationalizing their overall supply chain network. And really maybe in some cases where we've had a lot of acquisition of companies over time, and you may have today a facility in Dallas that's the warehouse that for widgets A, and then same company owns another warehouse on the south side of Dallas for widget B. We've seen some consolidation of those. So I don't know if that answers your question, but we have seen suppliers move ship points, or add additional ship points, and then some consolidation of ship points within the network on the supply chain side. Two, from a shipper's perspective, as it relates to fuel prices, we're probably immune a little bit to that in the transportation world, and I say immune to that other than if supplier A or supplier B needs to take a price increase related to fuel, they'll sit down with their buyer or their merchant and work through those increases. At the same time, a lot of times those merchants will get us involved and say, all right, they want to take a 3, 4, 5% increase. How can we help offset some of that cost increase, whether it's through additional ship points, whether it's shipment optimization? We try and focus on those. One thing I would add, and one thing that we've done to encourage our carrier base to become members of SmartWay, we actually have a SmartWay. If you're a member of SmartWay, you receive a different fuel surcharge than if you are not a member of SmartWay. And the SmartWay fuel surcharge is actually based on a 5-cent peg versus a 6-cent peg for fuel, so a little bit better. And it's about a dime to 10 to 11 cents difference. So non-SmartWay carriers actually receive less fuel surcharge than a SmartWay carrier does. And we try and make it equitable at the end of the day for partners so that we know that they are embracing ideas on working on fuel economy. That answer your question for the most part? Or?
Yeah, I think so. You've addressed the points pretty well.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I have another follow-up question. It's a simpler question for you, Greg.
Okay.
When you mentioned the ports of entry for Walmart, one thing that was conspicuous to me is that there were none that were north of Norfolk on the East Coast, in particular New York, New Jersey. I'm just curious as to why New York, New Jersey is not one of your ports of entry.
We actually, the first ship point we opened outside of L.A. was in Georgia, and then we went to Norfolk third, and we just have not had the volume yet to move up that far to the northeast. And if you really look at the concentration of our stores from where the demand points are, it's really in that Midwest and in that southeastern part of the United States, and we don't have the density of stores that we have in the northeast as we do elsewhere, so we've not had the need to really go there yet. But we have had conversations and dialogues over time with them about opportunities when they do arise.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do have one more question from the room here, but I just want to check. Did anything come in over the phone?
At this moment, I'm showing no questions over the phone.
Okay, great. Thank you. Do we have any other questions in here? Okay, then I think we are going to bring today to a close. I want to thank everybody for attending today, and thank you to all of our presenters. I think these were really good presentations. I'm going to continue to leave up the topic collection for 2009, so please feel free to continue typing anything in there or send me an email if you have any suggestions. The next seminar will be held on November 19th and will be on freight and land use, which actually I think is one of the suggestions that somebody had typed into there, so we will be covering that next month. If you haven't done so already, I encourage you to visit the Talking Freight website and sign up for this seminar, and also join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. So thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.